Head to the episode details and follow the link for promotional offers from PRST affiliates like Nike, Reebok, Under Armour, Rogue Fitness, Hylete, Oakley, and several others. As always, thanks for tuning in.
What's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Performance Rehab and Strength Training Podcast. Today, I sit down with Dr. Diana Wang and Dr. Dice K. Psyche of Open Mat Physio to talk about strength and conditioning considerations for all combat athletes. If you like this episode, please follow the podcast and leave a review. You can find my content on Instagram and Twitter, where my handle is PRST_PT. You can check out my Facebook page, Performance Rehabilitation and Strength Training, and you can check out my website, agprst.weebly.com. I hope you enjoy the episode. Performance Rehabilitation and Strength Training Podcast provides a platform for some of sports medicine's most influential individuals to collaborate. Tune in as some of the field's most well-renowned rehabilitation professionals, strength and conditioning coaches, and athletes come together to discuss the integrated world of performance physical therapy and strength and conditioning. Welcome to another episode of the Performance Rehab and Strength Training Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Jett. And today I'm sitting down with Dr. Diana Wang and Dr. Dice K. Psyche of Open Mat Physio to talk about strength and conditioning considerations for the combat athlete.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So for the listeners that are consistently listening to the show, you know I've had a recent episode with Diana about rehabilitation for really the grappling athlete and more specifically Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Dice K decided to come along today because he's going to take us into the world really of strength and conditioning and physiologic based principles for the grappling athlete. So Dr. Dice K, if you don't mind, can you kind of give the listeners just a short history about yourself? And also Diana, if there's anything you want to throw in there since last time that you have going on that may be new, you can also let the listeners know about that as well.
Cool. Sounds good. Again, my name is Dice K. Psyche. I'm a physical therapist and a certified strength and conditioning coach. Been a PT and a strength coach for roughly about three and a half years or so now. So still relatively new, but, you know, kind of building on everything so far. Me and Diana have been having a lot of good mentors and a lot of coaches that we've been talking to over the years. And I feel like we've gotten a bit of a head start when it comes to the strength and conditioning side of things. So it's been going well overall, and how I got into this field for the most part, I mean, at the beginning of college, I was actually going to be an accountant, so completely different field for the most part. I liked numbers, as stereotypical as it sounds as an Asian, I was good at math, so that's kind of the direction I was going to, but after taking some classes and stuff in college, I started to realize, this shit's kind of boring, so I got a little bit more into the exercise science. So I got my bachelor's in kinesiology at San Diego State. That's what kind of got me into the exercise realm for the most part. And one turning point for me was when my grandma had a stroke and I went to physical therapy with her after that. And that was my first involvement, luckily for me, as in physical therapy. And I was like, oh, this is different. That was my introduction to that. So originally, I was actually going to go into geriatrics and neuro. Obviously, that kind of took a big turn, as you can see as of right now. But as I got into physical therapy school at Cal State Long Beach, I had a clinical internship with Dr. Ziad Dadul from Ignite Physio. And that kind of introduced me to bridging the gap between rehab and performance and rehab and strength and conditioning. And that's what kind of changed my direction from the geriatric side of things and going into more of the sports and orthopedic side. And I don't know if some of you guys know, me and Diana are currently in a mentorship with Cool Heart Performance. And that's opened a huge door for us too, working with Dr. Jason Park, athletic trainer Omar Kennedy, and Diana currently works with Dr. Craig Liebenson, Dr. Ryan Chow. We have a lot of great mentors out there. So we're only about 3 years in. There's a lot to learn, but we're trying to educate our BJJ community as much as possible on the importance of strength and conditioning and building resilience.
Yeah, that's an awesome backstory. You definitely went from, you know, accountant geriatrics to combat athlete. You definitely went 180 from your original plan. That's awesome. You know, seeking mentorship, I think, in our profession is necessary, especially when you're working with athletes, because advancements in sports medicine are changing all the time. And to truly be a well-rounded sports clinician, you have to have strength and conditioning in your tool bag. You have to have it. So you and Diana both seeking mentorship for your role, especially because you have such a specific patient population. I think it's very necessary, and it's awesome to hear that you guys are taking it upon yourselves to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, as students, when we come are in school, we don't really think about that. But when you come out and become a clinician, it's really important to be able to have people who have been in your shoes and then kind of be able to guide you along the way. And Daisuke and I have taken it upon ourselves to really try to find mentors that aren't just in physical therapy, but also in strength and conditioning. A lot of coaches, a lot of people that we've like reached out to learn from, because that helps broaden our perspective as well as our quote unquote toolbox in terms of working with athletes. Because at the end of the day, any combat athlete, any BJJ athlete, they're all athletes to begin with. They're all humans to begin with. So if we can find those principles and foundations and lay them down, then it gives us a better opportunity to be able to be more sport specific or depending on what sport and what kind of athlete you're working with. So it's helped a lot with allowing us to drive our treatments and our programming through principles and not so much like specific techniques or whatever, you know?
The foundation of your program is through those principles. You have to have that underlying foundation. Really, as a physical therapist working with athletes, you manage the acute injuries and pay attention to the tissue healing rate times. Outside of that, you're a strength coach, really. So having that foundation to lean on as that athlete moves out of that the acuity of their injury and needs some more strength and conditioning, that's the name of the game, getting that education. So again, kudos to you guys for taking it upon yourselves to get that education and to continue to refine it. So the world of combat sports, combat athletes, to lay a quick foundation for the listeners that may not have too much experience with this specific type of patient population, you know, the world and the sport of MMA is huge now, and it's continuing to grow. So I'm sure everybody's at least heard of that in some capacity. But, you know, truly the specific martial arts and the demands of that are probably some of the highest of any sport in the world, right? So can you maybe just touch on a little bit of, you know, your exact patient population, and then we'll get more specific with dialing in some of the strength and conditioning that you program for them.
For sure. Martial arts wise or combat sports wise, I mean, there's tons, right? Like every country has their own type of martial arts and stuff like that. But for the most part, if you just kind of break it down a little bit into like two umbrella terms, there's striking and grappling for the most part. Obviously, there's MMA, so there's a blend of it too. So when it comes to striking, there's martial arts like clearly for Americans, boxing is a big one, Muay Thai from Thailand. If you want to go into Taekwondo from Korea, there's Kung Fu from China. For the most part, as of right now, I'm working with a guy that's doing Muay Thai primarily. I haven't worked with anybody specifically in boxing through Open Mat Physio. I've worked with some in the clinic itself, but there's so striking. So there's more punching, kicking, in Muay Thai, there's elbows, knees, things like that. But on the grappling side of things, on the other side of the spectrum, the goal is more for takedowns and submissions. So it's going to be the judo from Japan, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like we said earlier. There's sambo from Russia. And the combination ones will be mixed martial arts, like people watching UFC, things like that. And also like combat sambo is also another thing it's almost like a combination of both of those realms for the most part. Almost because they're wearing a gi, but they're also striking at the same time. So with gloves on. Sports have a different kind of demand from one to the other too. So we have to really determine like, oh, what is this person need for their sport that might be different for the other ones too. So anything you want to add, Dana?
No, I think you hit everything. There's combat jiu-jitsu that's like kind of coming on the scene, like open fist striking while you're doing jiu-jitsu. It's kind of interesting. It's like a little bit of like MMA, but more submission based and stuff.
There's a lot of different mixed martial arts that are made up of your patient population. And each of those martial arts, like Daisuke mentioned, has their own specific demands, both physiologically and physically. So to prescribe a truly sport-specific and individualized strength and conditioning program, you have to perform a needs analysis, because the demands of the sport are the same for every athlete, but every athlete may not need the same in regards to their training, to their performance training. Really, just to start throwing a program out there against the wall for every athlete who participates in this martial art or that martial art or this sport or that sport or whatever, you're already kind of setting yourself behind the eight ball. You need to perform that specific needs analysis for that player and then go from there, right? So what are some things that you put into your screening process that allow you to develop that program for the athlete?
Obviously, we work in a different kind of environment when it comes, since we're not really seeing them in person. And we don't really, until we actually talk to them online, we don't really know what kind of equipment and stuff like that they have. So we use a functional movement screen that we created based off of some of the demands that our athletes have. So just kind of going over roughly, we just look at global movements. We took some of it from the SFMA. So we have some multi-segmental flexion, extension, rotation, just global movement patterns. If they have any deficits there with, that we need to address, we can look at it for the, through there. We look at some cowboy sitting. We need to check their big toe extension, which is typically neglected within the sports realm. 90-90 positions on the ground, checking their hip rotations, internal and external rotation, which is really big, especially in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because we use hip movements a lot. And lastly, going into wall angels, pretty much this movement here, checking their thoracic extension, shoulder external rotation, because sometimes if you're lacking shoulder external rotation to get from the get-go and someone puts you in an Americana, you're already at a deficit at that point, and we're already in a bad situation. So we definitely look at global movements mobility-wise there first. Doesn't necessarily mean we're going to treat mobility through mobility exercises. We're probably going to do more of strength training or stability-based exercises to gain mobility at the same time. That way, our training is a little bit more efficient and effective that way. Other two umbrella categories that we also use is just strength and stability through beast crawl positions. Our hands and our feet have a lot of sensory receptors, and we want to make sure that we are stimulating those areas, because if we give your body a lot of information, the more information your body has, your body feels safer. And if your body feels safer, you move better. And if you move better, you become stronger. So from that aspect, we use a lot of mat-based or ground-based movement preparation exercises and stuff too. So we wanted to incorporate some of that into our screen itself. And also looking at lower extremity endurance, so split squat holds, side plank, hip abduction holds. That way we can see some of our frontal plane stability and stuff too. And also getting into some balance work. I feel like balance work is sometimes neglected because it's not sexy. Nobody ever likes to do balance work. But we wanted to make sure that we do have some kind of assessment in the balance aspect too, especially single leg balance. So we check a single leg RDL holds because that position is used a lot, especially in judo for judo throws. And those throws can be also utilized in BJJ too. So, and that's more of the hinge type of balance. And also looking at a skater squat hold. So we have some squat single leg balance assessments too. And finally, just going into some dynamic stability work. And that's just going to be a single leg vertical hop and a stick. So seeing how your engine works in the vertical direction and how your brakes work on the descent and the deceleration aspect too. So that's kind of the global functional screen that we use. And it's easy to use mainly because it doesn't require any equipment. So if it's some of like a client or an athlete just doesn't have anything at home that we can utilize, this works for all of them. But again, it really depends on the client. I know it depends is used a lot in the physical therapy realm, unfortunately, but you know, for the most part, it kind of makes sense because, we have some post-operational patients and stuff too, which they wouldn't probably be, say it's like an ACL reconstruction. They wouldn't be able to do half of the things on this list. So we have to make sure we accommodate for those athletes too. And, we'll start to make some changes within the screen itself. But at the end of it all we're really looking for is a baseline, where they're at right now, where their floor is, where their weaknesses are, and also where their strengths are too. So that's kind of what we're looking for with the screen itself.
And then part of it is like piggybacking off what he said is understanding the sport and understanding the art and understanding the needs of each person, especially within BJJ. You know, you have to understand what positions demand what, and then looking at, like Daisuke said, you know, what they have, what they don't have, what they need, and then kind of programming that into building just a better overall well-rounded person. And kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about like the big toe extension. I think big toe extension, like Daisuke said, is one of the most, what is it, overlooked quality, just because if you don't have big toe extension, you basically don't have function of your posterior chain. And in any sport that requires you to be explosive, if you don't have that, then you're having like a massive energy leak somewhere. So in order to, you know, be able to have access to that, if we work on it and then we drill it and then continue to get stronger in those positions, then you're gonna get a lot of things for free if you're able to do that.
Everything you said right there had a purpose, and it was very specific to the sport itself. Movement based, And the positions that you're assessing in are positions that are required for that sport or for that art. That's the name of the game. Like, you can get range of motion numbers, you can get strength numbers and whatnot. All that's doing for you is it's showing you what you're deficient in from a very global standpoint. It's giving you some insight to what positions you may not be able to get into. But when you break it down to that level and you have some position specific movement based, the proprioceptive input and the sensory input as part of your assessment is that's awesome. That's huge, because that is something I guarantee you that gets overlooked and neglected in a lot of programs, both assessment and with treatment as well. That's a huge part of being an athlete, is understanding where you are in space, especially for martial arts, whenever there could be severe damage that you can undergo because of maybe that's just a flaw in some part of your athletic skill set. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of great information in there. The big toe extension, you know, again, that's something that is very specific to martial arts, to grapplers, and how that affects your ability to use the posterior chain. As far as your assessment needs analysis, you hit on everything and you're able to do it. You're able to be efficient with it because your assessment is tailored to what that athlete has available to them, right? Especially now when you're not able to get your hands on the athlete. So a lot of great stuff in there. I think you hit it on the head really with everything, because it's specific to the sport. That's the underlying principle there. It's specific to your sport, so it's going to give you the most accurate information moving forward to address their deficits.
Exactly.
Building off of that, are there any type of specific programming templates that you like to use, whether it's just linear periodization, undulating, or is it just a combination of different things that you've come across along the way and you kind of sprinkle in a little bit of everything?
I typically utilize the undulating periodization for the most part, mainly because I was my original training was through CFSC, through Mike Boyle's program. So he uses undulating periodization for the most part. But again, like you said at the end, I do sprinkle in different principles here and there based on where they are in the training spectrum too. Because if they're getting closer to competition, I'm going to change the programming too, right? So it just kind of depends on where they are. That's the different thing about BJJ athletes and combat athletes versus seasonal athletes, where they have off seasons, pre-seasons, and in seasons. These guys are training literally year long. So you have to make sure that they have to be ready throughout the entire year. So based on that, the training kind of changes a little bit. Template wise, I don't really have one for the most part. I mean, if we're talking about just like sequencing of how I train people, it's usually, Diana might be pretty similar to this, but just going through a movement preparation, getting the joints, getting the muscles ready for it, getting the central nervous system ready for training. I do my plyometrics and balance work before the strength training, mainly because it's definitely neurologically more taxing, in my opinion. There's a lot of coordination involved with plyometrics and balance. And I feel like if the central nervous system is completely taxed after strength training and you try to do plyometrics after that, I don't really see the training being as effective and as efficient that way. So most of the time I'll do my sequences, the movement preparation, going through plyometrics and balance if they need that, and then going into the strength training side of things. And I think what I've been focusing more so recently after talking to, you know, Dr. Jason Park is putting a spotlight on what the main exercise or the main movement is going to be for that specific block or that specific training session. That way we can be a little bit more efficient. And I think I had this problem when I was first coaching. I think my first year out of PT school is I would just throw so much stuff at my athletes that I thought was important. And I looked at it, I would look at the program as a whole and be like, I don't even know what I was trying to get out of this session. And then now it's like, okay, now I get it. I need to put a spotlight on something, focus on one thing so that we can at least build on that one quality within that training session itself. So that's kind of something that I've been utilizing a lot more recently.
It's always something that we're working on, you know, working on improving. I don't really have as well of a, I guess, grasp on strength and conditioning like Daisuke does, but being able to learn from different mentors, like we talked about before, makes a really big difference. And trying to figure out the best way, I think it comes down to you have to measure anything that you do. So whether it's, you know, how many reps to fatigue or in like a movement prep, if you're looking at someone from rehab, you know, most of the time people have a lower floor or a lower baseline. You want to make sure that you're building on top of that to give them the prerequisites to endure something that's a little bit more advanced, or having to know regressions versus progressions based on what they're able to do. I mean, Daisuke hit everything that we kind of talked about, and being able to spotlight certain things, have blocks where you're like, okay, this time we're going to work on acceleration, a linear acceleration, or this time we're going to work on more of like a true strength, absolute strength based on where they are in the their technically season, I guess. So if they're not really competing anytime soon, then it's a great opportunity for us to build some absolute strength. Whereas if it gets closer, you don't want to be like one rep maxing everyone out. You know what I mean? So it just doesn't make any sense. You want to give them as much opportunity to train hard on the mat, and then give them these little things that will be like a complement to that, and then make them a well-rounded athlete while they're getting closer to their matches.
That's a good point. And I think every young strength coach is guilty of that. I guess essentially, as soon as you're done with school, there's just so much information available to you. There's just so many things you want to accomplish with your athletes. And then when you write that program and you realize like they're going to be here for 3 hours, like, you know what I'm saying? Like there's just so much that you learn to focus on, like what's your bread and butter for today, or really for that cycle. What are we trying to work on here? Then you have your primaries, you know what I'm saying? Then you have your accessories built off that, and you learn how to tailor the volume and the intensity and all that stuff. And that just comes with experience. So
yeah. And then I kind of a little bit more on that is when I was in Puerto Rico this past week, one thing that was really emphasized was just focusing on the basics. I think a lot of times as physios and as strength coaches, as you know, especially like you said, young and in terms of experience, we look, go on Instagram. Instagram has like 7 trillion bajillion exercise that you can pick and choose and be like, oh my gosh, this looks cool. And I have friends who are like new-ish physical therapists who are always like, or even students who are like, oh, I need to be more creative with my exercise programming. I need to do this. I need to do that. Like, can you give me some pointers? And I'm like, honestly, like if that's the path you're taking, then I will try to pull you back. Cause at the end of the day, it's all about being really, really, really good at the basics. So can you teach them how to lunge? Can you teach them how to hinge? Can you teach them how to create force into the ground? Like these basic things of going from, you know, pogos to marching to sprinting, or from like a really regressed version of a squat to like a I don't know, like a door handle squat to an actual front squat and then to a back squat. Like those are things that I think people don't think through. They're like, ooh, let me grab the BOSU ball. Ooh, let me grab the foam roller and do some cool, I don't know, mobility stuff. Where if you don't know how to teach these basic foundations, and I know as you guys are strength coaches, it makes a really big difference later down the line, because you're literally not teaching them anything that can carry over. And then they're just like, okay, when are they ever going to stand on a BOSU ball? You know?
Exactly.
It's tricky. It's like a hard place to be as a new provider, because you're just, there's just so much information. And that's why having mentors who kind of teach you, hey, no, like literally in Puerto Rico, all we did was we just swung bells. We learned how to clean, we learned how to snatch, and then we just sprinted for 5 days. We didn't learn anything fancy. We didn't learn like, you know, these things. We learned just really foundational principles, how to scale them towards the people that you need, how to scale them across, doesn't matter what population you're in, and then be able to make sure they're successful through the nuances of your cues and through the nuances of your coach's eye. And that's like, I think it's the biggest skill you can provide to somebody.
I want to give a quick shout out to my sponsors, Muscle Up Protein Bars and Gym Aware Training Equipment. Head to the show details and follow the links to receive your discount on all Muscle Up and Gym Aware products. As always, thanks for listening.
We're kind of getting into where you draw the line between like sport specific skill and strength and conditioning, because like as a strength coach and a PT, I'll just use baseball as an example. I'll never try and get somebody to throw 98. Like mm-hmm. Those guys can roll out of bed and throw 98 with or without me. Right. Yeah. But my job is to make sure you can throw 98 every fifth day for an entire season. Like that's where you kind of draw the line. Like you're going to get your sport specific work when you throw your bullpens with your field coach, understanding your role, what that athlete needs in regard to the demands of their sport. The listeners, if you can take anything from this episode, it's playing their sport and staying on the field is like number one. Our job then is to give that athlete whatever they need to keep that, right? Yeah. And then that athlete's going to develop their skill through their sport practice. We do our end to develop energy systems, strength, whatever, the, you know, movement pattern, movement-specific stuff. That's kind of where we come in. But I've seen those two blended before, and that's not our job. It doesn't need to be fancy at all is what I'm getting at. Both of my internships were very just raw. You're going to get stronger, and you're going to get better at your sport, playing your sport. put those two together, and you're hoping to give that athlete the best chance for success. You mentioned that, you know, in other sports, there's in season, there's off season, you know, and you can kind of program around that. But with the combat athlete, you're training for an event, for a day, for a fight, whatnot. So, and essentially you're training all year round around that. So what are some things you do to kind of manage training volume with their mat time or their time practicing their specific art? You know what I'm saying? Like, you program deloads every fourth week or so, or, you know, is there anything specific you do to kind of manage the two leading up to that event? Because I know that you're probably going to have some type of compensation or period in there or something you're doing to taper off before that event.
This is kind of the hard part when it comes to like online training and online programming. I would like to use, you know, more of acute chronic workload ratios and things like that. But like using the app, we use the app Train Heroic, and sometimes, you know, where I would probably use it is like an RPE times, you know, work duration, but the work duration sometimes is not accurate when people actually log it in. So it might not be as reliable as we want it to be. And at the same time, I can't get some of these athletes to really log, you know, every time they run, how long they ran, what the intensity was. Okay, now they're on the mat, how intense that was, how long the duration was. There's a lot of things to manage. If you're working with these athletes in person, it's way easier because you see them all the time. But when it comes to online, the communication that we get online is a little bit more limited, I would say. So I try to think or talk to my athletes and my clients about recovery through more of nutrition and sleep. Nutrition is definitely something that I think me and Diana kind of have to work on a little bit more of, because we just don't have a big of a background in nutrition, but we understand the value of it. So I think we were talking like maybe within the next year or so, we're going to try to get certified through either Precision Nutrition or Flex Diet or something like that. To get a better idea. Obviously, we're not going to be like nutritional consultants or anything. We're not going to be experts, but at least we'll have a background in it so that we can give them some kind of education or direct them towards the right direction. So my recovery method is primarily through nutrition and sleep, just giving them an idea of how important those things are to keep them as sustainable as possible, especially through their training. But as far as when it gets closer to the competition, I build, especially in the final month or so, the final block before the event itself, I actually focus a little bit more on fatigue resistance. So I'm not really trying to build power, build strength within the last 4 weeks or anything like that before the event. I focus a little bit more on the fatigue resistance and the endurance side of things. But that's just me. I think that's really important. I think that's what's a little bit different for sports like BJJ and wrestling. There's so much grinding within the sport that you have to have some kind of fatigue resistance in order for you to complete the match itself or just perform at your best. Because I mean, if you just gas out in the first minute because you're gripping so hard, and then you're just flopping around for the last 5 minutes, then it's pretty much useless. So from that perspective, I try to focus a little bit more on that aspect.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then I think one thing that Daisuke and I make sure we do really, really as much as we possibly can is we keep pretty close communication with all of our clients. If we're able to build the relationship and a trust between them, then we can get true, real like feedback in terms of how they're feeling certain days. So we can make sure that our programming is able to reflect some of it. And I mean, with grapplers, we've run into this problem a few times, is they're always going to say they feel good. But you can always tell when they're not. If you watch them move and they look a little bit different than what they usually look, then we're going to be like, all right, let's actually have a conversation of how you feel. And then as you continue to build this relationship, they become a little bit more trustworthy, knowing that, like from our last talk about, oh, it's not our goal to like pull them off the mat. It's our goal to make sure that they stay as healthy as they can while they're going through rehab, but also once they get back on the mat. So being able to have that trust from our athletes, from our clients, it makes a really big difference in being able to manage those fluctuations a little bit better. And then being able to create a program and adjust based on those fluctuations. So, but overall, like we actually have a friend, and he was a client before too, that's a nutritionist, and he wants to go into a little bit more grappling. So our goal is to, one, not only just educate ourselves a little bit more on the importance of nutrition, but also having people that we can consult in terms of, oh, hey, like, what do you think about this? What do you think is best for this? You know, because at the end of the day, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So having people around and building a good team, that's really, really important to just complement our mission to just build a better community of athletes and grapplers, and just, you know, like, that's the most important thing, you know?
You know, getting my CSCS and then just what I've learned on my own through continuing education, I can give the basic guidelines. Like, I know what you should be putting in your body, how much, when, all that stuff, what the sources. And that's where the education comes in. Budget comes into play, and, you know, travel and things like that. You know, I kind of get that. But being able to at least educate the right foundational principles of nutrition is huge, because you are doing a lot of online training and you're not able to get your hands on the athlete as much as you would like, I'm sure. You can see them. But what are some challenges that, you know, that you've come across? Like, Dice K, you kind of mentioned already about the controlling acute to chronic workloads. But what are some of the other challenges with telehealth and things like that? What are some of those challenges that come along with that, you know, in regard to trying to work with high-level athletes or athletes who are really a part of a very physically demanding sport?
I would say one of the hardest things is just being the brakes for that athlete, especially if it's more of a rehab spectrum side of things. It's like Diana said earlier, our goal isn't to completely take them off the mat. That is definitely not our goal, but unfortunately a lot of physicians, a lot of doctors will take them off. It's like, oh no, you shouldn't practice for like 2 months. I'm like, no, that doesn't help them at all. That's actually just going to make them weaker and then less tolerant to whatever they're going to be doing. So the hard part is just kind of making sure they're on board with that, and modifying some of the positions, modifying some of their training regimens so that they can still train. Because sometimes some of these athletes, like, that's all they have. That's their lifestyle. That's their mental and psychological nutrition that they're actually getting from the training itself. If we take that away from them, sometimes they feel like nothing. They don't, that's all they had. So our goal is always to, learn and get an understanding of what their training consists of, because every gym is going to be a little bit different. The demands are going to be a little bit different too. And getting an idea of like, oh, what can we change within your regimen so that we're not saying like aggravating some of your symptoms. If they're post-operational, even more important, it's like, what can we give them to do right off the bat so that they still feel like they're involved in the sport and they're not completely taken out of it. So that's always kind of a challenge too, because like Tana said earlier too, these BJJ guys, they don't know when to stop. And by the time they stop, it's already too late because they can't practice anymore. And we don't want that situation to happen. We're trying to build sustainable athletes as much as possible and try to stay as healthy as possible too. So I think from that aspect, we just have to right off the bat, just kind of lay down the lines. Okay, this is where we're going to start. This is the stuff that you can do as of right now, that you're comfortable with based on how you're performing with some of these exercises. And this is where we're trying to go. And these are the steps that we need to take to get there. That way, you know, each time they train, they have a goal in mind. It's like, okay, I want to be able to do this next. That way I can do this aspect of training, so on and so forth. And that's always kind of hard to get to at the beginning, because you don't have, you know, that kind of rapport just yet. We need to get that buy-in first. But that, I would say that's probably one of the hardest things for me, is just being the brakes, even if I don't want to be.
Yeah. And then the communication part too, and building the rapport, like Daisuke just said, it's a little bit trickier to do that over like a video camera. Cause you know, being in person, you have so many other ways of communicating through like non-verbal body language. And then you can kind of be in the presence of somebody. But that just makes it another challenge for us, and another like goal for us to become better communicators and being more specific on our cues and in the way that we talk to people, and being more specific on the way that we communicate what we really want. So a little bit like Daisuke said, you know, this is our goal, this is what we want, this is where we want to go. If we're able to practice that a little bit more through telehealth, like, who knows, you know, in person it's going to be even better, because now you have all the skills that you have in person, plus your communication is much more effective, you know? So those are all just a little challenges, but at the same time, like, opportunities for growth for us.
Yeah, especially in these times where telehealth has, it's proven to be efficient through a lot of different clinics from what I've seen and from what I've heard from other clinicians. So just based off that alone, I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon, even if or when all this COVID stuff is finally lifts or maybe goes away for a little bit. So it's just interesting to me that that may be a part of our practice now. But with that being said, so, or you kind of provided some examples of challenges to telehealth, but really now just in general, challenges working with combat athletes in general, because again, it's a very specific patient population. And for me just personally, one I'm very interested in hearing and learning more about.
You want to take that, Diana? Let me think about it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the psychological part. There's like this interesting mental side of BJJ and grapplers about, you know, being tough is just pushing through everything and anything. I can't show weakness. I feel pain, but I'll just work through it. You know, those types of things where now we're starting to realize that, you know, when you're feeling pain, it's normal to have aches and pains as a human being. But even as a jiu-jitsu athlete or a grappler, it's even more normal because you get put in funky positions and all these types of things. But what we want to do is be able to give them tools to just manage these like daily aches and pains. But when it comes to a little bit more severity of injuries, we know a lot of athletes who literally will get injured and then we'll be like, their coach will just say, go, just stretch it. It's fine. Or just rest for like 2 weeks. You know what I mean? And then one of our interns, his name's Chris, he's a black belt. So he has a bunch of experience with this. Of before when he used to get injured, his coach would just like, oh, just go on the side and stretch and then come back in like 2 weeks, you know? And as physical therapists and strength coaches, we know that that's not how you should manage injuries. But because that happens, like we just made a post yesterday about like the chronically injured grappler. You know, it's like, here's your starter kit. You know, you just get hurt, you know, you take ibuprofen, you rest, you foam roll, you rest for 2 days and then you feel better. Then you get back on the mat and you do the same exact thing. Repeat, 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 rinse and repeat, you know, that really affects you mentally because now you're like, oh, I'm never going to get out of this cycle. I don't know what I'm going to do. But for some reason, people are okay with ramming their head against the wall, not going anywhere, where right next to you, there's a door that you can walk through. It's like this, this whole culture of like, just be tough. It's fine. Just stretch it out and go rest. It's fine. You know, but then what they don't realize is years and years of years in doing this, you're starting to just take a lot of steps back. And then eventually you get to the point where you post on BJJ Reddit pages saying, is this even worth it? My body is broken. Whereas if you thought about it in the beginning and was a little bit more proactive and had people who were willing to reach out to you and say, hey, I can actually help you stay on the mat so you don't have to deal with quitting if it hurts too much. So like the mental side, there's, and then kind of a little bit earlier, Daisuke was talking about physicians and doctors that were, that want to pull them off the mat. There's so many of those and because BJJ and grappling, you get injured so often, they're going to the doctors a lot. So you have to think that this cycle of like nocebos of, hey, stop jiu-jitsu, this is never going to last forever, you need to just quit. Like these things really affect your mental health. And so when we work with a lot of these athletes and martial artists, they come in hot with this mentality of we're going to pull them off the mat. They come in hot with a defense mechanism of saying, no, I don't really trust you because I've had people that like you who have told me to just quit. So it's almost like part of our communication really has to be like, hey, let me just tell you first off, like our goal isn't that. We train too. We get injured too. We're just like you, except for we are on a mission to learn more to make you better and to make sure that we're pulling you enough back, just enough to keep you safe, but allowing you to do just enough to keep you sane. You know, so like some of those things that if we're able to really make that known, then that's where the walls start breaking down. You know, people start pulling back and saying, oh, okay, like I trust you now. I really appreciate that you're being honest with me. Like if you're able to break through some of those mental barriers, like that's literally one of the hardest parts of working with these athletes is they literally just like are like, nope, I don't trust anyone because everyone has tried to like ruin me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's an unfortunate part of healthcare is you have people in positions that are supposed to be advocating for physical activity and return to sport. My thing is, and this is what both of you, like, you practice Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You're both in there. So you understand how the sport works. I think that goes a long way in regard to a little sense of like, hey, they understand what I'm going through. They understand what I like to do because they like to do it too. This is me. This is like a personal thing, but it's hard for me to take advice from somebody who doesn't understand what it's like to be in my shoes.
It sucks though, because, you know, like, you have that whole thing of like, when you look at, like, it's like a doctor, just like having a credential, you know, people see that as like, hold that to a very high standard. And it's like, whatever they say goes. And this isn't to like knock on all doctors, because we definitely have some who are really, who do advocate for going to see someone who's a PT, who really understands the body and understands how to get you back. But the majority of our healthcare system is not like that. And it's more about making money. It's more about giving people pills and stuff. And I mean, honestly, it's an uphill battle, but it's fine, because, you know, the moral of the story is, if you just do good work, people will know and people will see. And then eventually, you know, we're going to be able to make a bigger impact than we expected on the community that we're really, really passionate about, you know.
And really, all you can control is what you can do personally, you and your brand and Dice Case. So as long as you keep trying to move the profession forward and help your clients, that's really all you can do. And hopefully, like you said, you can just continue to make a difference with as many people as possible who just start to figure it out. Like, hey, there's some value behind this. Taking 2 weeks off and taking some pills, you're doing nothing to the tissue. It's like you take a rest, you allow it to heal, and then you get hurt again. Well, why? What did you do to train that tissue to undergo the demands of that sport? But all right, one of the last things I want to get into here is, we talked a little bit about the strength training itself, but as far as conditioning, you already talked about building a fatigue-resistant athlete, especially leading up to an event. So what are some things you like to do for conditioning, you know, for your athletes? And again, I know it's going to kind of really depend on, you know, their energy system demands and how long they need to be able to perform and everything like that. But what are some things you like to do? How do you program, and just really how you kind of, you know, how do you handle that with your patient population?
Kind of funny. I don't really do too much, or I don't program too much conditioning, mainly because, kind of going back to the whole seasonal sport thing, they're training all year long. And I think the most sports specific conditioning that you can do is the sport itself, especially when it comes to grappling. So I actually don't do too much. If I'm going to do any kind of conditioning for some of these athletes, especially if they were injured and they weren't training for a long time and they're trying to build up their conditioning to get back into the sport, I use a lot of kettlebells. So that's why, like, I think there's a huge benefit when me and Diane are huge fans of kettlebells. I don't expect every athlete to be fans of kettlebells. You know, it is what it is. But I think there's a lot of benefit to the utilization of it, because if you think about the kettlebell swing or the snatch or the clean, is there's a period of complete relaxation and there's a switch into complete tension. So, and that's pretty specific towards a sport, right? Because if you were tense all the time, you will not last in a match whatsoever. And it's definitely, your movements are a lot more predictable that way. So from a performance side of things, you don't want to be tense all the time. And obviously you don't want to be relaxed all the time either, but we need that quick switch. And I think kettlebell swings, cleans, and snatches does a very good job of that. So if I'm going to use any kind of conditioning for people, whatever energy system that they're trying to build, I usually do that. But for the most part, all my online clients and even some of my in clinic ones, I don't do too much because they're already training a shit ton already as far as conditioning goes. So that's just my perspective. Everyone has kind of different opinions, but that's where I go with that.
Yeah, I agree with Daisuke. Grapplers do enough conditioning on their own. I definitely think that you can, if you're going to program it, then program something that's a little bit different that hits maybe a different part of the force velocity curve. And then being able to do that, you give them more tools and you fill more buckets and stuff like that. But if you know that their conditioning for jiu-jitsu specifically when they roll is pretty good because they train so many times and they're doing like 10 rounds of 5 minutes and you're like, holy crap, that's a lot, you know, then you can give them something that's a little bit different, that maybe instead of working on like aerobic stuff, then you can give them like anaerobic stuff that just helps them build a better system overall. But yeah, kettlebells are great. And I think like Daisuke said, you know, depends on the athlete, but if they're okay with training with them, like, no, that's such a great tool to use, you know?
Yeah, that's a perfect answer. to be honest with you, because again, it goes back to the question I asked earlier about managing your training and practice loads, like kind of how, like what you do to manage that. But the demands of their sport are so high physiologically. So not like, so they roll for, like we'll use your example. They roll, they do 10 5-minute rounds. There's 50 minutes. Essentially, there's going to be a little bit of gaps in activity in those 50 minutes, but there's roughly 50 minutes of high level anaerobic, physically demanding activity.
Yeah.
So now we're going to go do hill sprints. Now we're going to do aerodyne sprints on top of that. It's like, what are you trying to accomplish? Not only are you getting conditioned with your sport, you're getting conditioned for your sport and the positions that you're going to need to be in. So again, it goes back to what we've been talking about the whole time, the sport specificity of your training. And, you know, that should be the underlying principle for everything that you do as when you're programming for strength and conditioning.
Right. It's all about intention. Mm-hmm. If you have an intention behind your stuff, like, cause you know, Daisuke and I do program sprints, but they're not like, oh, we're going to sprint for 50 minutes. It's like, okay, we're going to do we're just going to teach acceleration. We're just going to go some wall drills. We're going to do some like short stretch shortening cycle drills. We're going to do jumps, a little bit of prep, and then we'll go maybe, you know, 10 by 10s, and you're going to rest 2 minutes in between. And then all we're working on is just 10 yards. You're just running 10 yards. That's it. And then that's it. And then like, that's the end of your workout. Like, you know, because sprints to us is a one rep max. You know, when you lift something heavy, if you're putting 100% force into the ground, like you can't be doing that every single day. So you just have to be strategic in terms of planning some of these things of, oh, if you're going to have a high day, and we talked about this last time, right? High, low days, intensities. If you're going to have a super high day, okay, let's have a super high day. And the next day we're going to do some a little bit lower level stuff, but we're still going to work. The conditioning is like you said, you know, they get enough of it when they train. It's just a matter of now what we know in terms of like which bucket is low, and then being able to kind of fill those a little bit, because then now you're starting to have a little bit more evenness across the board.
Yeah. One of the great things about programming for strength and conditioning is there's just so many different ways you can go as far as the intensity and load and frequency and whatnot. Like you can just alter so many variables. That's why I like the undulating model. Like you can just from day to day, you can kind of change your fitness goal without losing maybe something you've been building on for the last couple of weeks and whatnot. You can change your loads, but add some accommodating resistance. So the load isn't so physically taxing, but you can also create some speed with the movement. So, I mean, there's just so many things you can do to help the athlete. And it all goes back to educating yourself in the world of strength and conditioning to, you know, ultimately know how to progress and regress when necessary. And again, just give that athlete their, you know, the best chance at success. So,
yeah.
Daisuke and Diana, awesome conversation. Is there anything else you'd like to throw in before we sign off?
No, just follow us on Instagram. If you guys have any questions about anything, just DM us. We're always open to chat. Our goal, like we always say, is to just build a better community and serve this community that is just, we feel like is really underserved and not recognized enough where when they really, really, really need it. So if you want to just jump in the DM, we can always have a conversation.
Yeah, I'll make sure that I'll tag Open Mat Physio. I'll tag both of your personal accounts in the show details, so everybody will have access to you if they want to reach out. So again, thanks for your time. Awesome conversation, and I definitely look forward to the next time we meet up.
Podcasting is gaining more traction each day, and the beauty is anyone can do it, and it will cost you next to nothing to start your own show. I've gotten the opportunity to speak with individuals around the world that share my same passion for sports performance, and I've been able to share my message globally. Without my show, none of those opportunities are possible. Buzzsprout is the hosting website I use to launch my show. With Buzzsprout, you'll get a website that you can link your social media accounts to promote your episodes. You can track your show's stats. They list your show in all major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And most importantly for me, is anytime I've had an issue or simply needed help figuring something out on their site, I reached out to them and they've always gotten back to me that same day to help me resolve the issue. So if you're thinking about starting your own show, I highly recommend using Buzzsprout as your hosting website. If you'd like to learn more, follow the link in the show details or reach out to me directly and I'd be happy to help.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the PRST Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please give the podcast a follow and leave a review. You can also find my content on Instagram and Twitter, where my handle is PRST_PT. And you can also check out my website, agprst.weebly.com. Thanks for tuning in.